the statement out loud. The Department of Religious Studies at the University of Kansas is conducting a research project that seeks to preserve the history of various churches and other organizations in Kansas. We would like to record your memories of your experiences in religious organizations. We expect that each interview will take about 1 hour, give or take. We assure that you are not obligated to participate and may discontinue your involvement at any time. Since we are trying to create a public record of Kansas religious history, we are primarily interviewing persons who agree to let their interviews be available to the general public through a website to be identified by names as the person who was interviewed. Should you have any questions about the project, please contact Professor Timothy Miller at 785-864-7263 or tkansas@ku.edu. If you have any questions about your rights as a research participant, you may call the Human Subjects Protection Office at 785-864-7429 or email mdemings@ku.edu. And of course, I can text or write those down for you as soon as this interview is over. So today's date is April 23rd, 2018. What is your name?
Scott Dunkley.
Scott Dunkley. Can you spell that for me?
S-C-O-T-T-D-U-N-K-L-E-Y.
Excellent. And Scott, where did you grow up?
I grew up in Nova Scotia, Canada.
All right. Excellent. Oh, so you immigrate to...
Yes.
Excellent.
I moved mm-hmm. here in 2005.
Okay.
So it was about 13 years ago.
Excellent. And where do you live now?
In Olathe, Kansas.
Olathe. Excellent. And do you know where Trinity is located? Holy Trinity.
It's in Overland Park, mm-hmm. at the corner of 119th and Flum, I guess.
Yeah, I was just kind of looking for the...
Sure, no, it's 104th in Overland Park, Kansas. It's right on the border. But
hey, yeah. So, can I ask, what practice or religion did you follow before conversion?
I was an evangelical. Mm-hmm. I guess it's a non-denominational Christian, I guess, in a generic form of practice and moved around. But admittedly, growing up, I wasn't really all that active. It was something that came to me more as an adult, mm-hmm. and then started going to non-denominational churches before going on the journey to the Orthodox Church.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. So did you, during your time living in, you said you were you live in Olathe? Did you go to that church when you lived in Olathe? What was the timeline for that?
Sort of. So, let me see. So, I can't remember when I started going back to church, but I'm going to probably ballpark mm-hmm. it about 2008 or 9. Mm-hmm. Kind of after when my kids were born, kind of mm-hmm. when you suddenly go, we have to either, my wife's a practicing Catholic, mm-hmm. And I kind of thought, okay, well, I've got to participate in some particular way, but I have struggles with the Catholic Church. Mm-hmm. And some of the theology, I'm sure, too, but it's just some of the things historically that happened and so forth. So mm-hmm. the time really was neither here nor there. It was just, okay, mm-hmm. my personal background when I was growing up was in Canada, was primarily, we'll call it a non-denominational Methodist, maybe kind of loose, like Protestant type mm-hmm. religion growing up, so wanted to get more involved in that. So as a result of going through and growing up in Olathe or living in Olathe at the time, started going to a local non-denominational. Today's day and age, it's a mega church.
Okay,
it's
gotcha.
Pretty big. So it wasn't anything local, but it was nearby my house. Mm-hmm. So, at, 2,000 members or something like that. So mm-hmm. started going into that, and so I want to say that was probably around 2008, 2009, somewhere in that ballpark. Mm-hmm. I haven't really thought about it for some time. And then from there, moved to a smaller church mm-hmm. as a result of a campaign that they had mm-hmm. to not question theologists in terms of what your purposes were, uh-huh. what your goals were, where can you be best used? And at the time, I had a neighbor that was brought in, had come from Oklahoma, was taking over a small church in the mm-hmm. And so we kind of went over to that church and were there for about a year and a half or so, maybe close to 2 years. So all I know is, thinking about this, by 2012, mm-hmm. I had started in, you know, having started to question some of the, and some things happen, and there's lots of church politics that always go on.
Yeah.
But certain things happen that allow me to suddenly start to question certain things that have been going on in terms of some of theology, some of it, right, some practice, some a number of other things. As you become more versed and study and do some of your own research, and so you start to maybe question a few things, and then you say, okay, well, where can I go? And so that's what led me towards the Orthodox Church in 2012,
mm-hmm.
towards the end of fall, I believe, and then, which again, not too far from where I live, but at the same time, it was part of the conversion process, I guess, was just somewhat local, and at the same time, looking for something that kind of answered the questions that I was starting to seriously have, I guess, and trying to understand where all this stuff was supposed to be, and as opposed to the things that sometimes just didn't fit when I was in the other churches that I had attended. So, mm-hmm.
Gotcha, yeah. Can you tell me a little bit about the process of conversion? Like, how long did it take? Sort of like your personal experience with the like physical process of converting. I remember I talked to Father Tim, and he said that their conversion process, his conversion process typically takes around a year, but then I talked to a couple other folks who had set it around a couple months, or
I think it depends on the church. Mm-hmm. It depends on who you deal with or talk to, mm-hmm. and the circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
So when I came, so it was the fall of 2012, mm-hmm. and we were chrismated in 2014,
mm-hmm.
at Pentecost. So there's two things going. One,
on Pentecost.
Yeah. So that's generally, funny. Father Tim doesn't. And again, this is a generalization.
Mm-hmm.
Our church doesn't generally do complete adult chrismations, mm-hmm. except on certain major holidays.
Mm-hmm.
So if you joined early in the year, mm-hmm. you might get chrismated by at Christmas. That would be about a year or around that time period.
Yeah.
If you're converting, in my case, obviously I started attending in the fall. Mm-hmm. We became catechumens the following September.
Mm-hmm.
So it was the fall of 2012. Pushes into all of, you know, part of the 6 months, 7 months, 8 months later, we are made a catechumens, and then so then it becomes whether or not it's going to be Pascha or Pentecost, mm-hmm. when we, and just due to the circumstances, it was it became, just from a logistical standpoint, better at Pentecost. The other thing too is my wife did not convert,
mm-hmm.
so my wife and I have three kids.
Mm-hmm.
The oldest was, she's 13 now,
mm-hmm.
was 4 months old when we moved to Kansas.
Mm-hmm.
So when, by the time I started attending the Orthodox Church in 2012,
mm-hmm.
she was already either been confirmed, not confirmed, got her on for First Communion in the Catholic Church. So she was, mm-hmm. being raised in the Catholic Church the way my wife had always intended to it.
Mm-hmm.
As a result of our family situation, that probably delayed things a little bit too, mm-hmm. because the question was whether or not was she going to convert, and I don't know if she ever thought it. I mean, we talked about it, mm-hmm. but for the most part, she was pretty, as I mentioned before, she's practicing Catholic.
Mm-hmm.
My wife is also Filipino by descent, so obviously in that culture, the Catholic Church is pretty, plays a pretty prominent role,
mm-hmm.
and so she, was educating our oldest daughter in, mm-hmm. in the. You know, doing the school of religion, the Catholic Church, and so forth. So,
mm-hmm.
while we gave our oldest daughter, who's 8 or 9 at the time, the choice,
mm-hmm.
she was more than happy to stay on the path that she was on. And it's open to all our kids for the most part, too.
Yeah.
The younger two were much younger. I think at the time they were 2 and 4, something like that. So, as a result of differences between the two,
mm-hmm.
and the fact that the Orthodox Church allows part of the intent of the community is that once you're chrismated, even as a child, you can receive communion, where the Catholic Church delays that.
Mm-hmm.
It was, we decided, well, but unless, why not let our kids, the two young ones, join me in the conversion process? They had no objection to it either. They had attended church with me. Actually, the ironic twist is the first day I went to the Orthodox Church, I went by myself.
Uh-huh.
Just to sort of get the scope of the land. Mm-hmm. The next Sunday, mm-hmm. my youngest daughter went with me. She wanted to go, even though we weren't making her attend or anything. She just said, I want to. So she's 2 and she wants to go.
Mm-hmm.
The following week after that, she doesn't go. My son goes with me. And, mm-hmm. pretty much he's attended with me ever since then. So he's the one who's in the middle. Mm-hmm. And so he was 4. And and maybe it was the novelty of going to something different. I mean, there's a we have a video of them when they were in, where he was in first grade. I mean, we try to be intentional about our practice of the faith.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're cognizant of their Orthodox, and it's a little different than the other Christian practices.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result of that, they take pride in it. For the most part, there are times it's frustrating for them too. Mm-hmm. We're fasting again today. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But at the same time, they take pride in the fact that it is something different. It is something you work towards, and they understand. Mm-hmm. For the most part, although it has trying days, they understand that there's something intentional about it that makes it that there is. Sounds materialistic, but there's a reward, and it comes to your understanding of what you're trying to accomplish, I guess, to some degree. And for the most part, they see it as this will pay off down the road, either in spiritual rewards or in not to say they're going to get something out of it, because mm-hmm. that sounds, again, materialistic, because that's mm-hmm. not what the intentionality is. Again, mm-hmm. when they get to be a teenager, that may change,
yeah.
as a lot of teens go through. But there is something unique about it. They recognize that this, to be a Christian, an Orthodox Christian, doesn't require to say, hey, I put my hand up, I'm done, and mm-hmm. that's the end of it. It's
yeah.
something that says, this is a process, and this is going to help me be cured from sin and from some of the other theological components that are maybe unique to our church, but that I need to stand because it's discipline the church gives me because they've done it for 2,000 years.
Mm-hmm.
So while I may deviate from that because I'm lazy or sloppy or whatever, but I do know the church puts these guidelines, rules in place for it. So that effort is required because, at the end of the day, that's what's demanded of us, if you will, to be intentional. And so they get that. Although, admittedly, it's still not easy. Kids always find it, well, you know, they said fasting. So they joined with us. And so in 2012, we started going to church. Prior to that, you know, we'd watch maybe something on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
We'd go to the Catholic Church with my wife periodically as well, but there was sometimes just trying to figure out where to go. But then once we started going on a regular basis and meeting with Father Tim, and then eventually just going through the process of asking the questions and saying, okay, are we ready to go? So for the most part, it was a timing and participation, attending the services and the liturgy. And because of our unique situation, it might be longer than the others, and mm-hmm. others may have been quicker. You have to be patient, you go through it, and, you know, I guess the rest is history. So in Pentecost 2014, we mm-hmm. converted. I don't recall, there was nothing magical or,
mm-hmm.
or hey, you have to do these, check these boxes. Mm-hmm. It was simply just a process of attending the liturgy,
mm-hmm.
having conversations to see where we are as a family, and mm-hmm. and you know, when my wife was there and my other kids were there, and so today we
mm-hmm.
we still Saturdays typically are for the Catholic Church and Sunday for the Orthodox Church, just because we don't have the number of liturgies, obviously. So
yeah,
again, it goes back to how the Catholic Church has kind of set up themselves mm-hmm. and set up ourselves. So and. We still regularly go, and the kids attend, and they don't do as much as I'd like in terms of some of the camps and stuff of that nature, but
yeah.
they still participate and go every Sunday, and then we do stuff at home, and we try to make an intentional practice of it, because the Orthodox Church is, one thing I really appreciate is that there's a lot to support,
mm-hmm.
some of it intellectual
mm-hmm.
books, not just the Bible, obviously, but mm-hmm. books and readings and sayings of the saints and things of that nature. But there's a lot of, you can do these sets of prayers, you can do these, and everything's encouraged mm-hmm. to do some. And the cool thing is, there's never enough, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
But at least you're not lacking in terms of that direction, where previously, in my evangelical background, it really was just a Sunday thing. It might be some emails that say, hey, don't forget to do this, or don't, mm-hmm. for the most part, here are today's readings, but it wasn't, because sometimes it was because they're so big.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's hard to be, you're just a number, and it's really easy just to check the box. Or if it was in a smaller church, sometimes you get caught up in just church politics and people wanting to do their own thing, and you start saying, how is this part of the larger church? So anyway, so that's kind of the long-winded answer to your question.
Thank you. Yeah, no, thank you. I appreciate it. So do you think living in the Midwest sort of influenced your conversion journey at all? Like, for example, there are a lot of Lutheran churches like you'll find in the Midwest, but not so many so Orthodox churches in the Americas. Was this ever sort of an obstacle for you?
Short answer is no, but I do question myself frequently on this.
Okay.
Because we often joke about it. Because you've got to remember, I came from Nova Scotia, Canada. I missed this, but I went to Ontario to go to school, worked in the Toronto area for about 7 years, and then moved here to, and in this particular case, I worked for a client. And I never thought in my wildest dreams that I'd become Orthodox in Kansas. It just doesn't seem like a logical, so it doesn't surprise, like my parents, we told them, hey, we're going to church and you're free to join us when they come to visit and so forth. Because again, Canada's got a church participation rate that's way, way lower. So, but it didn't surprise them. It doesn't, you know, nominal Christian family maybe growing up, but you know, there was some intentionality in terms of we, you know, go to church at Christmas and things in Easter or something like that. But for the most part, it was a lot more casual. So, but when you have kids, it suddenly has to put things in. You have to make the decision: are we going to go to church or not go to church? Because if you're not going to go to church, then your kids are growing to grow up in a different milieu than if you would be if you go to church. And if you're going to go to church, you can, at least my opinion, and as it relates to the church today, kind of just going once in a blue moon, really, what's the point? You don't need to go to church. You might as well just not go. So if you're going to go to church and you're going to be intentional about it, then you really need to make the effort on a more, you know, obviously people go on vacation and things like that. That doesn't always make it convenient, but you're going to go on a regular basis. So I don't think the being in the Midwest had really any impact on it, other than I was in a mega church, evangelical church, and that would have been quite common anywhere, really, if you're in the Midwest. Maybe if I was in New York or some place that maybe, or Canada, where the participation fell lower, I don't know. But I was even when we were back in Canada, we would, my wife's a practicing Catholic, so we would still be curious about churches. The culture here does somewhat influence it to some degree. There are more churchgoers, as a general rule, in, say, Kansas than, say, Canada or maybe New York or something like that. And so when you're at your the influence is on you, and say at work or something, oh, did you go to church this weekend? And you may have some family or friends that are participating, so you can bounce ideas off them and things like that. But my conversion, for the most part, was done almost in secret. I mean, it was most of my friends, and I had a fairly devout evangelical friend of mine at work who, I mean, we would talk church, if you will, on, we didn't go to the same church, but we'd talk theology, we'd talk just what was going on in our respective lives and our spiritual lives. When I elected to stop going to the church, our conversations relating to this, they would ebb and flow, but for the most part, church wouldn't come up. So there was a period of a good 6 months or so, and he said, where are you going to church now? And I said, well, I'm actually attending an Orthodox church. That kind of blew him by surprise. Like, what is that? Nobody's ever heard of an Orthodox church. And occasionally they'd have some questions relating to it, and then it kind of evolved from there. So most of mine was kind of on my own or through my immediate family of asking questions and things like that, not from the surrounding community, other than the fact that maybe being in the surrounding community got me back in a church to begin with. But that would be about as far as I would take it. The rest of it was just through my own pursuit of truth, quote unquote truth, what I felt was or believed that was the questions that I had over in my prior denomination, faith, spiritual formation, to where I felt I was being led and said, okay, well, how do I answer these questions? And I found most of those answers, maybe not all of them, but found most of them in the Orthodox Church. So,
excellent. So you've already sort of given me an overview of what attracted you to Eastern Orthodoxy. Is there anything you want to sort of go into detail on, or we can also move on to the next question, or is there anything you want to...
I have... Other than just it is being introduced to is something that, I mean, I've always been interested in religion, even when I was in college years and years and years ago.
Can I ask what you went to school for?
I went to school for business administration in Wilfrid Laurier University in Waterloo, Ontario. So
I have a friend from
there. You go. Yeah. So I went to school a bit. Wilfrid Laurier University, it used to was a Lutheran school. So it actually has a Lutheran seminary on campus. And because of that, they have a lot of religious texts. So I'd often explore the different religious... I mean, you know, here I am in my 20s, just trying... Or early 20s, trying to understand certain things. As I said, I didn't have much of a... maybe more nominal Christian formation as a child and as a teenager. But it always interested me. And I always, was always curious about it. So while exploring that was always interesting, and I went through periods of time when I'd study Eastern philosophy, mm-hmm. Buddhism, mm-hmm. And some other Chinese things, just because I thought it was very interesting, and a lot of stuff is. And so I think part of that, not the Orthodox Church is mystic by any means, but there's an element of that's definitely Eastern in it.
There definitely is, yeah.
And so when you're kind of sidetracked by Western theology, and then you get in, you're studying over here Eastern Buddhism and other Eastern thought, Japanese stuff, and you're intrigued and curious by it, and then you realize, and then it kind of, for me, it was like, okay, well, that's obviously an Eastern thing, but then you come back to the Western Church, and you're kind of going through whether or not it's Catholic or an evangelical approach, Protestant, and then you get exposed, you suddenly come to the Orthodox Church, you suddenly go, wait a second, there's a bridge here that kind of brings in, and maybe it was always, maybe you could say it was always there, mm-hmm. It's just the Western Church maybe deviated from that over the, just because of cultural practices and norms and of our Anglo-Saxon background, if you will, mm-hmm. and Puritanism and a few of the other Protestants that have heavily influenced the American Protestant Church, if you will, where the Eastern Church has left a lot of that stuff unchanged, and then you realize, you're like, hey, there's a lot of practices. So that maybe there was some material aspect to it that's somewhat attractive for somebody who obviously had an interest in Eastern thought and religion anyway. So I thought that was really neat when I was going through the exercise. But in the grand scheme of things, that obviously wasn't the main reason, but it is an attractive thought when the Orthodox Church brings a lot of not just the intellectual aspects to it, but a lot of visual and sound and smells. Like it hits all your senses, where many of the other churches may only hit one, or just loud music. But take your pick in terms of how you want it. But I do find it very intriguing that those bridges were crossed, and when you look back on it now, you're like, oh, that's really cool. That's stuff that was something that would naturally attract me. What I sometimes question myself is just, if it wasn't for certain events that happened in my life, would I still be on the same path, mm-hmm. or would it have happened earlier, mm-hmm. or would it happen later? And that, you know, I'd like to believe that I'd still be where I am, mm-hmm. and just the timing of it would just be different, that's all.
Okay, excellent. So, if I can be more specific to Holy Trinity for a second, what sort of fellowship activities do you do outside of regular worship services?
That it varies. Mm-hmm. We had, obviously there's some of the stuff that's more formally organized the church mm-hmm. will do, whether or not it's picnics or things. As I mentioned earlier, my kids don't participate in the camps as much as I'd like them to, mm-hmm. but it's their own personality issues, just their own personalities that they are not. They're a bit more introverted and so forth. But
yeah,
so I have been participating since even before I converted. When I was invited to participate in what we call a small group with, at the time, our deacon, and mm-hmm. who has subsequently moved to Tulsa, Oklahoma, mm-hmm. and one of our friends. So I came to church in the fall of 2002. That particular family mm-hmm. converted as well.
Okay.
And they converted that Christmas or Nativity, as we would call it. So he was a couple of years ahead of us, but he was going through the final process of his conversion. So they invited me to join their coffee sessions or their breakfast sessions. We do meet once a month, mm-hmm. and we were going through the institutes by St. John Casham, I think. And so we were reading that book. So I joined them at that point. So we would meet, and we probably met for a good, let's say that's 2013, maybe 14, 15, maybe. Yeah, I think it was about that time frame, about 2 years. And some people would join us, some people would leave. People move, things of that nature. So that particular gentleman and myself continued to meet. We've invited more people to come to us. So then a couple of years ago, or maybe a year or so ago, another gentleman moved from Texas there, and he joined us, and he's been a regular meeter. We've got another guy who lives down in Lewisburg, mm-hmm. who came up from Memphis. He moved up here a couple of years ago, and he joins us when he can. Obviously, Lewisburg's a bit of a poke to get to Overland Park.
Yeah,
for 6:30 in the morning, breakfast.
Yeah.
So we meet on a regular basis to go. Right now, we're going through the 30 Steps to Heaven book. We've been doing that for the last year, and we just read a chapter, a session, and we chit chat. We have fellowship. Occasionally, we also meet outside of church, but that's one thing that we've deliberately done for the past, I guess it's been now almost 4 years.
Wow, okay.
To just get together. And some months we can't meet, mm-hmm. but for the most part, we're pretty intentional mm-hmm. of getting together to hang out, have breakfast, and so forth. So that's one intention, going through a book and having some conversation for an hour and a half mm-hmm. before going to work. the same group of people also did still get together outside of the church.
Yeah.
As guys, we went to a range on Saturday just mm-hmm. recently and went shooting clays and things like that, just to get together to do things. Especially being unique because we're all Orthodox, and that's very unique in certainly in this part of Kansas. So we do that, and we'll get together for, like, ad hoc stuff, as I mentioned there before. So we'll do that. Sometimes we get together with our kids, mm-hmm. but it can be a challenge mm-hmm. for kids to get together, and just because of activities. And one thing that we, just like I think any suburban parents, run into the conflict between doing secular activities, sports, and so forth, and how they conflict with religious activities, mm-hmm. but not wanting to just isolate your kids to just the religious ones,
yeah.
or. And so you're trying to balance and say, okay, well, I want my kids to play soccer, but they also play, you know, what do they do when they have tournaments and games mm-hmm. at certain times, especially on a Sunday morning, where mm-hmm. maybe 30 years ago that wouldn't happen. They would respect the fact, but, you know, there's so many fields and not everybody goes to church, and so they kind of mm-hmm. do that, especially maybe in an Orthodox community where it's a little bit harder because we have fixed liturgy times and they don't move, mm-hmm. where in the Catholic Church you can make it fit your schedule,
yeah.
which we often, you know, for better or for worse, do. So mm-hmm. that's been something that's been a bit more of a challenge. But for the most part, there's been, for 3 years, I also, Father Joshua came to Holy Trinity with, and there was a couple of teachers, and we had a course, and there was several of us at the church that took this, I'm going to call it a university level type Orthodox history and university kind of level course for, it's for the diaconate, but none of us, I mean, we didn't do any real yeah. homework except read.
Yeah.
A lot of reading.
Yes.
As you can imagine. So a lot of reading, reading about different saints, reading different the theology of the church and from different perspectives from different saints, and doing that for 3 years. And that was something that I did, and that took a lot of, like, every Saturday
mm-hmm.
or basically following the same semester you'd follow for the school
mm-hmm.
For 3 years essentially, and we did that. That was that kind of overlap between before I converted to when I actually was converted. So I started I started in the fall of 2013, and then we finished it, I guess, in 2016. And wow. So there's been certain things of that nature that I've participated in. Some of them, as I said, formal, mm-hmm. some of them a little less formal. And we continue to meet and do what we can to be, because it is unique to be Orthodox in this area, to try and make sure that our kids retain it.
Mm-hmm.
as much, and trying to live that intentionality, which we definitely have to. And maybe the Orthodox Church makes it easier
mm-hmm.
because everybody in our church, for the most part, is intentional about it, or many of them are. They're familiar with the services. They're familiar with, there's not this just, and it does happen, but to me it seems less, at least in our particular church. If you go to one of the other churches, it might be different, but where there's less people just show up once a year. There's some, mm-hmm. but so therefore it's easier to build those relationships and mm-hmm. hey, we're doing this, and so is so and so. It's mm-hmm. not which when you're having kids, it helps to have the same, you know, that support and those bridge, you know, those community surrounding around, just being around you and giving you that, just help, because it's different. So,
understandable, yeah,
cool.
So what does a typical worship service look like for you? Just to, like, you can be as detailed
is it
or not.
Orthodox or
yeah, yeah. Okay. At Trinity, sort of specifically, I've been to Orthodox services before. So it's just as specific or not as you want to be.
So we have two. I'd say we have two. Major type different services, if you will. You have one that I call just regular standing prayer services,
mm-hmm.
and kathos and things that were just reading psalms and reading. It may be structured, but it's for the most part there's no communion, there's nothing, and it's you're reading them, and you're for the most part standing and chant. Well, we chant all mm-hmm. for the most part, and going through. And sometimes you're participating in that, and sometimes you're just listening. Where you obviously have the divine liturgy, which we do. Every Sunday, and mm-hmm. so as I mentioned, so when we're not doing a communion, it could be, as I said, it could be an akathis. You'd be in theory, it could be, or a preparation for a liturgy, like a vesper service or so forth, which are very arguably similar. And then, of course, we have our divine liturgy every Sunday, and that involves some prep, if you will, prayer readings beforehand, and then going through the different components of the liturgy. Which still, I mean, I'm sure it deviates from 2,000 years ago, but at the same time, it has still broken down into the components of being prepared for the, you know, various different gospel reading, like, you know, the readings from the Bible or gospel reading, and then preparing for communion, and then of course the after communion stuff. So as part of that, you're standing, you're praying, you're reading psalm, you're either participating with the choir or you're listening and trying to pay, you know, you're paying attention, mm-hmm. and it's amazing. And it's it can be anywhere from an hour and a half to 2 hours, depending on, you know, I'll have a long father sermon maybe, and mm-hmm. amongst other things. But trying to pray and worship the Lord in the context that maybe doesn't. For my kids, I have to explain to them, say sometimes it's not always what, it's not what necessarily we want. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's what God has asked us to do, and so sometimes we have to do it. Remind ourselves that He's set up this structure. Which some days are perfectly, you're all in and you're paying attention, and some days it's a little bit more of a challenge. Mm-hmm. It's not a concert. It's not 10 minutes of just singing and or anything of that nature, and then followed by a nice sermon that tells you how good everything is or how what you need to do or something that like a Dr. Phil service or whatever. But it's, although there's going to be a sermon that's going to have learning lessons in it, it's not going to be, you're not there really for the sermon. You're there for the Eucharist and the preparation to get to that Eucharist, mm-hmm. and then using the teachable moments, and then as you're going to get along the way, and then continue. And it, you know, and then obviously there are different times of the year that the services vary a little bit, whether or not we use a certain St. John Chrysostom service or we use St. Basil service or whatever. But for the most part, they're very, very similar. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of, without getting into the details of every single component that we do, but it's a lot of standing and a lot of chanting.
Excellent. Or singing, so. Yeah, thank you. How is the church governed? Do you have boards? Do you have...
We have a parish council mm-hmm. that I actually sit on right now.
Okay, excellent. Do you have a specific title for your chair?
Apparently I'm a vice president, but I don't think in our little area that really matters a whole lot. Mm-hmm. I think it's more, those are more formal rules to make sure that when we have quorum and we have things that, you know, that certain decisions are made.
Yes.
And they, so I guess they rotate a little bit too, so... I mean, obviously, so we have a local parish council that... you know, sets budgets and makes major decisions, and of course we have the priest who interacts with the OCA mm-hmm. at the top level, so it's not quite, it's not congregationalist the way that you might see a completely independent mm-hmm. church, or maybe even a Baptist church, which tends to be very independent. There is a definite connection, but it's not hierarchical like the Catholic mm-hmm. Church, which is we appoint all your people, though mm-hmm. the OCA would definitely be involved in the appointment of a priest. Mm-hmm. It's ground up, so it's almost like both. Mm-hmm. We work together in conjunction with it. Although, admittedly, most of the stuff that I've been involved in has just been our church. We just have to make sure that we pay and we influence it. But there, you know, our priest is constantly working with the OCA and the other, our bishop, and of course all the other priests in the area, which tends to be a pretty big geographical area for his deanery, if you will, just because mm-hmm. of the obviously we're pretty spread out.
Yeah.
So.
What kind of relationship does Trinity have with other local religious organizations?
I can't speak to outside. Mm-hmm. I know we have a very close relationship with the other Orthodox churches in town.
Excellent.
So we meet either during like Pascha for mm-hmm. Vespers on, and they rotate them around. We do share Bible school type thing uh-huh. with the other churches. The Greek churches in particular. Mm-hmm. Outside of the Orthodox Church, and we have some stuff downtown with Reconciliation Services and with St. Mary of Egypt's mm-hmm. Orthodox Church. Yeah. But outside of that, it's not tremendous. I mean, that's not to say it's not ignored. It's just that we don't have any, because we don't have an affiliation with them, nor are we on the same page theologically. Mm-hmm. Notwithstanding that, as it relates to the Orthodox Church, we try to be as connected as you can in a suburban community that has a million things to do outside of church. So you try to be as encouragement as you can mm-hmm. for your parishioners to show up at other church events, whether or not, for instance, today is St. George's feast day, and so Annunciation had a service. Mm-hmm. And if you're on the Serbian Orthodox Church, which is on the old calendar, theirs is in a couple of weeks because of the calendar differences. Which is a whole different thing to study.
I talked to a Serbian priest.
Yeah, so having said that, people will go to that service if they're around and they can make it. So we'll have some people of our church, especially maybe those who are retired or whatever, will go. And if we have a particular Sunday, people will come from their church, and their priests may show up as well. So there's interaction. It's not just, hey, do we serve together, but there's some worship together as well.
Excellent. Awesome. Very cool. So you talked about your children a little bit, but how did sort of like having children in the church sort of like influence your conversion journey?
It was more impacted by the fact that my wife was already involved in church. Mm-hmm. It was more like I had to be more deliberate and more intentional in my own practice of faith, because it's something this day and age is easily watered down and or dismissed. I have a lot of friends and, family, my wife's family and so forth, who went to church all their lives and are no longer really actively participating or practicing at all. And so that's something we wanted to make sure that our kids received, that education and that spiritual formation while they were children. So they were really young. So they didn't have really, other than our intention to have to raise them as Christians, once I became Orthodox, as Orthodox Christians, and my oldest daughter still being an intentionally Catholic Christian, that would probably be the only extent to what we were trying to say. Hey, we've got to make sure we pass down tradition, that they're fully aware of engaging. They know the differences between them, although my wife has to admit that sometimes that the American Catholic Church has deviated further than say maybe the European Catholic Church, which still does so many of the traditions that we in the Orthodox Church still do, and sometimes something a priest will say something and she'll go, and she's like, oh, we don't do that, but you guys do that, and so she can recognize where that may come from. So and so we make an intention of going together as best we can with the whole family to each other's churches, if we will. Who knows, maybe that's going to screw the kids up when they're older, I don't know. At least they'll be very well informed, and hopefully at that point in time, when it comes to faith practice, they will have the tools, one way or the other, to maintain the faith that they were raised in. So
excellent. Can you tell me about some of your best or worst experiences at Trinity? Best and or worst?
I don't really have any worse that I can think of.
Well, that's good.
Every church has politics, although I would argue our church, and maybe I just haven't involved myself in them, where other churches where I've been exposed to have had some pretty nasty politics, and that can be very challenging sometimes. Probably the best was my first Pascha, just being experienced. Now, unfortunately, it was by myself. It was Pascha, and the Orthodox Church is done at 11 o'clock at night and goes into the next day from Holy Saturday into Holy Sunday. And I was, because it was 11 o'clock at night, my kids were going, they were young. My wife was like, I'm not, you go. I wasn't Orthodox at the time, so I went. But just to experience that, such a unique, special bond with people who are going through the same thing. And I don't remember if it was in May or in April, but it was late. It was obviously for the most part, they're not the same as the Western calendar.
Yes.
And so that probably, just the experience to go through that Pascha service was pretty amazing, just to experience it and to be part of such a joyous occasion with everybody else, and then feasting afterwards after a long fast. That's probably my best memory so far. And every Pascha is really good too, but nothing can really beat your first one that you go through. Especially as it's not one really as an observer, although I wasn't officially Orthodox, I wasn't even a catechumen, but at the same time, just to be knowing that that's what I was going towards, that was a pretty amazing experience. So
that's fantastic. It's fantastic. Can you think of anyone else I should interview, either inside or inside of the community at Holy Trinity or outside?
Jeremy Kirchhoff.
All right.
Just because he is a don't ask me how to spell his last name.
That's
I can give you his contact name. He's a doctor. Mm-hmm. He was the one who I meet with. We've been meeting for the last couple of, actually the last 4 years. Mm-hmm. And I don't see why he wouldn't want to talk to you. He's just, other than he's busy. Mm-hmm.
Does he go to Trinity?
He goes to Holy Trinity. He meets with us. We're going to the same book. Mm-hmm. And his family is his whole family converted, him and his wife. And I would say they are, at least from an outside observer status, doing what they can to try and build an intentional Orthodox family as a whole. I teach his kids, I taught both his kids. I teach at the Holy Trinity as well, and he teaches as well. He teaches the older kids, and I teach some of the younger kids. And I, based on their intentions with their children, there's a definite trying to build a deliberate Orthodox family. Where my family, while trying to definitely raise and Orthodox children. It's two of them out of three.
Yeah.
My wife's not there. Uh-huh. So we're doing a deliberate Orthodox, maybe traditional uh-huh. Christian upbringing, using Catholic and Orthodox and using those traditions, which are somewhat definitely dated, go back a long time, and there's some definite intentionality in the things we do, and as opposed to maybe some bit more wishy-washy or just more check the box. There's some definite deliberate thing, but they're definitely, I would say, trying as a convert to convert family to mm-hmm. to build that intentional Orthodox family. There's a few others as well, but he would be the one I would mention. The other one would be Adam Lockridge.
I've been talking to Adam.
Yes, he would be a good, but just because Excellent. His background is different than mine, mm-hmm. And he thinks different than me, which I'd love to listen to him talk and just say, because he comes at a different perspective. So
That's great. All right. Thank you so much.
No worries.
I'm gonna shut these off.